Thank you. That you have some type of identification here, because that's what kept me coming back. My sobriety date is June 16th, 1997. I have a sponsor. Her name is Jovi Whalen, Jovi W., and she's out in Tennessee. And I know it's like a small crew. We're like, our arms are everywhere. So she has been out there for 2 years, has 39 years, and has started 2 meetings, and has taken this program out to Tennessee. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If there's anything you get from me tonight, is Alcoholics Anonymous works. And the woman standing before you tonight is not who came in 28, almost 29 years ago. And it's because of a loving, forgiving, merciful God that I have found here. And so I welcome you again if you're new. And I hope you stay. And Erin, thank you so much. She has an amazing program. And it's just so funny. My sponsor says, Cheryl, you'll never see yourself the way others see you. You just won't. Because my perception and what lies in between these ears is effed up still, you know? And if I don't do this program a day at a time, and I come to you and connect, like, thank you for having us. This room is amazing, and I love the energy in this room, you know? And that's what kept me coming back, is the warmth, the kindness, you know, and the love, the love. It doesn't matter what I look like. I mean, it doesn't matter where I've come from. You guys have loved me, and you taught me, you know, how to love myself. So again, I'm here to share with you what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And what it used to be like was fun until it wasn't, you know? I'm the middle of 5 kids. Neither of my parents are alcoholic. I was born in Long Beach, California. My parents immigrated here from the Philippines to find a better life, you know, to find a better life for their kids. And they wanted this better life. And so we moved here. I grew up in San Diego, and always felt restless, irritable, and discontent, like Erin was talking about. I just was never satisfied. And to this day, I can want something, get it, and then not it. You know, I could want to buy something, get it, not it. I can eat something, it doesn't fix it. You know, I can, and that's the cunning, baffling, powerful part about this, is there's so many shiny things out there, whatever it is, but it's alcoholism. It's like wanting to take me out. It's wanting me to take my eyes off of what really matters, and it's love and service. And if you would have told me that when I came in here, I would want to punch you in the face and say, exactly. But I'm one of those corny ones now where it's like, you know, drugs and alcohol has been replaced with love and service. And that is what gets me out of me. This program has continuously smashed my ego. And that's what I need. Someone as self-centered, selfish, and just... my favorite subject is me, you know? And I came to you, again, I was the middle of 5 kids, and it was constantly fighting for attention. Because if you're like me, you might relate to a little bit of sensitivity and just not enough attention. Like, wanting to be invited to the party, you get in, you know, and you don't even like the person, you know? And I suffer from that. It's horrible. And so... my dad was a compulsive gambler, and my mom was a compulsive Catholic, and I like to change that. She is a devout Catholic, and she had this loving God, and all she knew was to tell me, like literally, they didn't have the skills to communicate. When we went to school and we were able to talk, it wasn't like, how was your day, honey? It was not like that at all. They were busy working to try to feed 5 mouths to go to school to get a better way of life. So I came to you with not a lot of communication skills, not a lot about talking about feelings. I mean, I just showed up, felt funny. I had these big eyes, and people would make fun and make owl noises, and like I was born on Halloween, and they would like make fun and like call me a witch, and I was just super sensitive. But that was my first addiction, was sugars. I thought like sugar was made for me. I was born on Halloween, and it was just, I don't know, I just, I thought my dad wasn't around because of me, you know, and it was all about me, 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 me. Like, I was a kindergartner, I remember, or whatever, and we lived in Washington, D.C. I went to school in Virginia because my dad was in the military. That's how he brought us over here. And I was just that kid where, like, I would see something I wanted. I'm a liar, cheat, and thief. And I wanted your shiny pencil, so I stole your pencil. And I'll never forget, I went to the back of the room, and the teacher, the kid was crying because his pencil was missing. And, you know, they had a huddle, and then all I remember is the teacher saying, has anyone seen this pencil? And I was like, now what do I do? And so, of course, they let us scatter and go and look for this pencil. And, of course, I'd come out of the closet, I'm like, oh, here it is. And they all knew, you know, and I love to steal. Like, I don't know, there was something about stealing that was just so exhilarating. You know, your stuff was always better than mine. You know, your Doritos at your house always were cheesier than mine. And I don't know what that was, but it just, I didn't want what I had. It just wasn't, it wasn't tight. It wasn't good. It wasn't it. And so my first drink that I can remember was when I was 12. And it was whiskey from my dad's, when we went to Italy, like they had one of those, like, it was like a globe. You opened it up and there was alcohol and there was my dad's little bar. And it was whiskey and gin. I just took whatever glass I could find in the cabinet. And we poured ourselves whiskey and gin. It was my girlfriend, Lisa. Didn't know they didn't go. And I mean, what do I know? And so that was to begin my love for alcohol. I drank that down. I got warm. I don't know. We heard, like, we were kids. We didn't know anything. We heard, like, okay, get up, turn upside down, and it'll rush to your head, and you'll get a better high or something. And so I did that, and anyway, she ended up going home. I stayed in my house, and I woke up to vomit all over me. My gums were bloody because I tried to eat in the middle of the night, and I scraped my gums, apparently. So when I drink, I black out. I projectile vomit on you and anyone around me, and I don't remember anything that happens. Period. And it never got glamorous, it never got better, and it was a really sad state of affairs because I didn't know that I just didn't know what was going to happen. So let's see. So we moved around a lot. Like I said, I'm in San Diego. I somehow managed to get through let's see, sixth grade. Let me talk about sixth grade. I don't know who taught me these words, but like I remember writing a note to my girlfriend, and I said the most unkind words about my professor or my teacher at the time, and I slid it down the way to my girlfriend, and she was supposed to read it, you know? The sickest, most unkind words today, like, it would not be nice. Like, anyway, my heart still kind of breaks about this, but my girlfriend didn't find the note, my teacher did. And then at the time, I was, like, dabbling with Black Beauties back then, and this guy that was selling the Black Beauties comes to me, and he says, hey, you're in so much trouble, you know, the principal's on the phone with your dad, and you are in so much trouble. I'm like, shut up and give me my Black Beauties. And he ends up being right. The teacher reads the whole entire letter in front of the whole entire class. And I had no remorse or shame. I just thought, give me my Black Beauties. And And then my dad comes and picks me up, and he was right. This guy was right, and I was so mad. And all I remember was driving home, and my dad was just looking at me like, why did you do this? And I'm like, because he is, and just crying and, like, still defending that, like, he was this horrible teacher. And never in a million years, he was of service as a teacher trying to teach innocent kids for, like, 35 years was he ever as humiliated as that. And so I had a little mouth on me, and I don't know who, my mom's like, I don't know who taught her those words. And I grew up going to church every Sunday. I mean, I don't know who taught me these words. So anyway, this was the kid that I am. I go to high school, and it was all about the outside. Somehow I became a cheerleader, and I was telling Aaron on the way here, I was a high school cheerleader. And that's kind of like Friday nights after the games, after the football games. I had this dual identity. I don't know if anybody had those, like, you know. And it was Friday nights after the games, you know, a little innocent, drinking Zimas and strawberry, you know, Boone's Farm and, like, all that stuff. And, again, projectile, you know, vomiting and ending up with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever. I made it through high school. Somehow, some way, I got into college. I ended up being a cheerleader at San Diego State. And little did I know it was the biggest party school. And because of the way I'd been behaving and drinking, a lot of the moms would say, oh, wow, she got into college. Like, you know, they just thought I was going to be someone who's going to drop out and get pregnant or what have you. So I made it into college. I was a cheerleader. And then, let's see. I don't know if any of you relate to being extreme. So I went from drinking and, I gained my, no, not yet. So I went to San Diego State. I was a cheerleader. I had a great time. And I went from, like, drinking and partying to, like, wanting to all of a sudden be a bodybuilder. And so I had a bodybuilding coach. I was in a short skirt. But if you asked me, was that you down on the field, I would totally lie to you. I don't know what that was about. I would say that was my twin sister. And then after San Diego State, I think it was like 2.5 years, I was done with that part of my life. I got into UC Irvine, and I went from an Aztec to an anteater. I went to be a cheerleader at UC Irvine. I don't know what this cheerleader thing was all about. And that is where I proceeded to say, screw the exercise. It gave me my cigarettes and my beer, and I wanted my pills and everything that came along with it. All I remember was a year and a half of finishing college, not knowing what just happened, you know, literally offering my professors anything to pass me, literally. And I remember the picture of seeing myself with total bloat and like a cap and gown and a beer in my hand. And the only people that wanted to show up was my dad, because I think my brother graduated the same day, so it was just my dad. Thank God for my dad. I can't believe my dad didn't beat me. I swear to God, I would probably have beaten my kid if they acted the way I did, but no, just kidding. So I managed to graduate from college, and this is where it kind of got funky, because I thrive off of structure, and that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship and the program. It's like, I need cues. I need orders. I need to be reminded. And so without a college transcript, if you will, or a schedule of telling me what I need to do, where I need to go, I don't know what the hell to do because I'm an alcoholic. I know how to drink and use. So that's what I did with my college degree. And this is not what my parents came here for, is for their daughter to come and drink and use after they paid for her to go to college. And so, but that's all I knew. And so I drank and used. My old stomping grounds were in San Diego. I don't know if anybody has partied down there, like Pacific Beach, Mission Beach, Ocean Beach, Lower Companions. I mean, it was so fun. It was so fun, and I was the bikini rollerblading, you know, beer drinking. It was so fun until it wasn't fun, and the Beachcomber was my hangout. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but I would just drink, and it was fabulous. And there were certain parts of me that always felt guilty, call it Catholic guilt or not, but there was always something about me that I wanted to clean it up. I wanted to do good. You know, there was just something inside of me that wanted to do good. So what I would do is I would try and volunteer. And there was this one company, I think it was Head Start or Home Start, where I wanted to volunteer. So I volunteered, and my job was to answer phone calls for rape victims and domestic violence victims. Meanwhile, I was drinking, using, and pretty much should be calling the hotline myself. So these calls would be patched through to my house, and I was supposed to answer the phone. And I lived with five guys at the time, and we were all just going out and drinking, and I don't know, everyone was going off with their college degree, either to graduate school, or I don't know, studying abroad, or doing whatever people do after you get your degree. And I was trying to, like, redeem myself by volunteering, and the phone would ring, and all I remember was picking up the phone back then, no cell phones, pulling the cord out of the wall and throwing it out my window. And so the guilt and the shame of, like, I couldn't even volunteer right, you know, and I didn't even connect to what I signed up for and the people that might have been calling. So I just had to drink, you know. I grew up with this, like, this God, right, that I was supposed to go to church with as this loving God. There was no such thing as a loving God, you know. The way I was behaving and how I was being, I knew that I was going to hell. So I might as well burn it to the ground, because it makes sense. So anyway, I end up pulling a geographic or doing a geographic. And for those of you that are new, a geographic is basically thinking that somewhere else is going to be different, but unfortunately you take yourself with you. And I went from San Diego to Los Angeles in, I think it was 94, but I did get a job though. Let me just back up real quick. I did get a job after college. I worked for San Diego Credit Municipal Credit Union. And that's what afforded me to drink. Back then, they didn't have cameras, so I worked for a bank and basically would steal money from this bank to go drink. And I liked to steal. And I didn't know that this is not what you're supposed to do. I was a teller, and they never knew why Cheryl's was never balancing. And my little teller thing. And so I think this one girl was on to me, though. Anyway, I ended up one night, drinking, and I was with my girlfriend, Heather, and at, I don't know, a dollar drink night or something ridiculous, and got super loaded, drove home, loved to drive drunk, hit a city sign, dragged a city sign underneath my car for 100 yards. And, you know, today, like, just if you think about that, that could have been, like, your dad, your mother, your kid. Thank God it was a sign. It was a freaking city sign. Thank God. But I proceeded to get out of the car. Back then, we had pay phones, no cell phones. I called people to come and pick me up, and nobody was going to pick me up. They're like, oh, not again. So I called my dad. I thought, let me just call my dad with my college degree and tell him that I got a flat tire. So I proceeded to do that. It was in La Jolla in San Diego. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. Nothing good happens at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know. And he comes to the site. He watches me get sobriety tested, and it was like, you know, a show on Cops. Like, I'm dancing with the cops and just twirling around like a fool and just having a good old time. And my dad had to see that. And, you know, again, not the daughter that he thought that, you know, he raised, and such humiliating moments for me. And I just remember, like, Red Hot Chili Peppers playing, you know, in the background, but it was like skipping and it was playing all backwards. And I don't know. So, right? I love that. I love them. So anyway, I did get put in jail. I went to Las Colinas in San Diego. They were filming Betty Broderick. Do you remember that movie, Betty Broderick, back then? Yeah, so I ended up staying in there a little bit longer than I was supposed to. I was pissed. So that's when I did my geographic. I'm like, okay, enough of San Diego. And I blamed San Diego. I thought it was San Diego's fault. My girlfriend helped me get a job for a company, Ernst & Young, an accounting firm. So I worked on Fifth and Flower, thinking a suit would fix me, thinking the job would fix me, thinking, you know, money would fix me, and I'll just start all over. However, like I said earlier, I took myself with me, and I just did the same stuff. You know, you were supposed to schedule accountants, not sleep with accountants. And I got that wrong, and I was just a freaking hot mess, and it wasn't pretty. So basically what happened, I lived in Brentwood. Little did I know, down the street was like the synagogue. It was the Wednesday night Pacific Group synagogue. So whenever I get really close to feeling like I'm gonna, I don't know, I needed to volunteer, I needed to do good, I started working out again. And that was, of course, an addiction. It was all an addiction. You know, everything I did to the extreme, didn't even know what moderation was. So I started working out, and then I remember hearing some guys talk about drinking and going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard about it because I had my DUI. And I was very intrigued. So they lived in Hermosa Beach. I lived in Brentwood. Little did I know Pacific Group was less than a couple of miles down the way. But I wanted to be anonymous. And I'm like, I like to keep secrets. So I wanted to not have you know who I was, when in fact I had no idea who I was. And I hid. I went down to Hermosa Beach Alana Club, just checking it out, you know, just visiting like we do, you know. And what ended up happening is my last drunk, I had no idea it was going to be my last drunk. I mean, I can remember many a nights, like the night that I woke up after the DUI. I had to go to DUI classes. That's what happens. It's not as expensive as today. Thank God I didn't get one now. I would hate to do that. But I was with some strange person. I woke him up. I'm like, get up. I have to go to class. And I don't even know this person's name. And I'm like, can you help me get to DUI class? Like, that was just one of those nights. Like, incomprehensible demoralization. I mean, just disgusting. Like, nobody taught me how to behave like that. So anyway, I ended up finally going to this Hermosa Beach Alano Club. Then I learned what a meeting directory was. Then I'm like, let me check some meetings out. And I ended up in Ohio Street, Pacific Group, in West LA. And that's kind of where it all started. So this man introduced me to this woman, and they showed me this meeting directory. They circled all the meetings that I would go to, and there was just something super mysterious about these people, just kind of like tonight. Like, there's something I heard when you guys say the Serenity Prayer. It's this energy, it's this spirit, it's this love, it's this warmth, it's like someone's saying underneath it all, come and join us. Like, there's safety here, there's peace here, there's love here, come and join us. And I never felt like that out there. I mean, I was out there being run by, I'm not sure what that was. So I actually ended up getting a sponsor, not knowing what this was about. You know, it's a cool clubhouse if you've ever been. People would come up and they would clap, and I didn't know too much about like LA at the time. So the funnier you were, I was like, oh wow, you know, you probably got paid a lot to do that. And I didn't know that like people weren't paid to do this. I didn't know what a sponsor was. I just had no idea, but there was something in here, like I just described, that kept, that made me come back the next day. And so my journey began. I asked this lady to sponsor me, and it was from that point on that I would say I was willing to finally listen to someone else. I was desperate enough to do it someone else's way, because the emotional pain and the spiritual bankruptcy that I had, meaning like I couldn't look at myself in the mirror, I couldn't look at you guys in the eyes. I mean, I came here thinking it was cool to not wear undergarments. I thought it was okay to like not shower for days and like, you know, steal from you and take your husband or whatever it was. I was just a disgusting animal. And she likes that. But I had so much to pretty much learn that like I'm not unlovable because I took those actions. And that's pretty much what AA taught me, is that I could be loved, you know, that I could be loved, and that I didn't have to be this useless, taking, selfish, all about me, whatever I wanted, when I wanted, from who I wanted it from, spoiled little twat, you know. I'm sorry. Anyway, and a day at a time, you know, I have learned to grow up in these rooms. And that is by sharing honestly with you guys as much as I don't want to. I mean, speaking is not my forte. I will read for you and I will share for 5 minutes. I will share in a participation meeting all day long. I will read your short form, long form. I will do whatever. I will clean. I will take any service commitment. But this is not, I'm not a speaker. I'm not a circuit speaker. But I was telling Aaron that, like, this has been done for me for 28 years. How selfish am I to think that I don't have a message to give to you guys? How selfish am I to think that what I have to say doesn't matter to the newcomer? Because I don't care. You're not going to run me away from this program because I have this big, huge God today. And I'm going to keep giving back because you guys keep giving to me. It's a selfish program in that, like, my God is huge. My life is amazing. It's not perfect, like Aaron said. But I have learned, like, a day at a time that my thoughts and my feelings don't matter. I just have to show up. I mean, the last thing I wanted to do was come here, period. And I'm sure some of you can relate. But the beauty is, it's contrary action, and that has saved my ass. Like, it has saved my life and afforded me the riches. And that's not like the car that I drive, that I drove here. I don't even want that car. That's a quality problem, guys. Like, I love my life today, and it's not because of the outside stuff. It's because I can look at Mark and just be current. Like, he called me, and he's like, "Where are you?" Or, like, you know, just making sure everything was okay. And I love that I get to say I'm going to be here, and I'm going to freaking be here. Because it was done for me. I didn't know how to do those things when I came in. I used to teach, I'm totally dating myself, I used to teach aerobics when I was newly sober, and step aerobics, and there was this gym in Santa Monica. I lived in Marina Del Rey, and I was newly sober. I had that disease where I could not show up on time. People would call me from the gym and be like, "Are you coming?" And I'm like, I mean, I just couldn't. I don't know what that block was, but like, I have raised a child who's in college now, and I took her to school every day. She was never late. Like, I need an award for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is AA. Or, like, I mean, like, miracles happen in this program, and it's not easy. You just have to change one thing, and I'm sure you've heard it. You just have to change everything. You know, and you don't have to change everything tonight, but you have to change everything. And so I'm going to share this one little thing is Mark asked if I had a 10-minute speaker, and I said yeah, and I asked Erin. I hadn't heard from her. I knew she was going to call me back, but then I asked a friend, Kim, and Kim said, I would pay to come with you on Sunday. 2 days later, she calls. Her 14-year-old daughter calls me to tell me, Cheryl, it's not Kim, it's Layla. My mom called. My mom wanted to, I can't even say it. My mom wanted me to call you to tell you that my brother died. He was 20 years old, and it was a blue pill. It was Percocet laced with fentanyl. And this kid has been struggling since he was in high school. And I haven't even talked about this part, but God has given me the experience to have walked through losing my stepson 11 years ago. And so I don't know how this works. She would have been here, like, but she has to do what she's got to do. And I pray, and I want you guys to pray that, like, that, you know, God wraps his arms around her and that family. And it didn't change what I had to do tonight. I still had to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. And so what happened was, and I'm still kind of in disbelief. I can't even believe it. And I did talk to her once, and she said, you know what, Cheryl? She's like, when I met you 5 years ago and you told me about your son dying, I had a feeling that my God brought me to you because you were going to have to walk me through it. And I was just like, what? So anyway, I got sober in the Pacific group, and the very first 5 years were fine, whatever. All of a sudden I get to do these adult things, you know, like I'm just not normal. I remember getting married, being asked to get married, boy meets girl on AA campus, and I don't know what the hell I was doing. I was crazy, crazy. And I fell in love with this man. You weren't going to tell me I wasn't going to be with him. And we had a big Pacific group wedding. It was newcomers. It was like 600 people there. It was crazy. It was fun, though. And as far as relationships, I mean, I think that's been the biggest thing for me is growing up. Like, how you know I'm sober is I've been with this man for 24 years and I've been monogamous. I mean, that's sobriety. Amen, right? And I absolutely love this program because this man lost his son and my stepson, and the fact that we're both still here, sober, I don't know what that is, but that is why I keep coming back, is because we are the lucky ones, you know? We are the lucky ones that wake up, have choices, and we can come to the meeting whether we feel like it or not. And as I was saying, like, I don't like speaking, but my life is so rich and full that, like, ooh. Where's that? Where is it? Oh, you want to come up here and say it? For the, no, I'm just kidding. But so then, like, I would say that was probably one of the hardest times in my sobriety, is walking through, as Melanie was saying earlier, who knows my stepdaughter. I mean, I'll never forget getting that call that night, and and then Charles leaving, and then going to the courthouse, and then me calling my sponsor, you know? It sounds so weird. It's like, what do you do when you get a call that someone got stabbed to death and that's your stepson? Like, what do you do? I didn't call my mother. I didn't call my sister. I didn't call my best friend. I called my sponsor. And she came over within a few minutes because we had a new puppy and my daughter was 8 at the time and she was sleeping. So she came over. And now God has given me an opportunity to be able to give back to my friend Kim, and I don't know way, and I don't know how, but it doesn't go anywhere. You know, grief is bigger. Grief is a whole nother thing. that I don't wish upon anyone, but it is a part of life. And I think the message, too, is you can stay sober through it. So my life just incrementally got better. Like, there were certain things at the podium that people would say. Like, I went back to school, and I told you how I graduated, you know, offering services to my professors to pass me. I had an opportunity to go back to school, and I think it's a rite of passage. I went back to nursing school because I am Filipino. Hey. And so I went back. I fought it for like 20 years, guys. I was like, there's enough of them. No, Mom, thank you. No. And I just was like, anyway, I prayed a bunch about it, a ton about it. And I remember getting my sponsor, and she said, why? So I gave her my pros and cons list, and a day at a time, I had the Thomas Merton prayer, and I prayed this one prayer. And I showed up. Interestingly, there was another sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous who got into the same exact program. Her husband, John G. and Charles, were friends, and we both came, you know, we both were married to someone who had kids, and we were both in our late, we were older, second career. So it was freaking awesome. And honestly, it was one of the hardest things I ever did, but that was all you guys. Everything I have today is Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, so divinely inconvenienced is what has kept me sober, and I hope that I am willing to be divinely inconvenienced a day at a time to put you in front of me, because that is the answer, you know? That is the answer. Anyway, I'm trying to think of where I was in sobriety. So nursing school was amazing. And again, one of the gifts of sobriety, I never thought in a million years that I was smart enough. That was one of the reasons I didn't want to go to nursing school, is because I didn't think I was smart enough. I was like, you know, the surfers that you call them kooks because they have, you know, they surf the wrong way. I just thought I was like a kook, and I couldn't, like, wasn't smart enough to do it. But turns out, I'm smart enough to do it. And I was telling Aaron on the way here in August, I should be finishing up my master's. I'm a little bit of a late bloomer, but you could do anything here. You could do anything here in sobriety. You just have to keep showing up a day at a time. And it does take work, but it's well worth it. And I think I'm going to end early, which is probably one of my favorite things that speakers do. So I hope that you have found anything in my talk, and if not, there's a ton of other meetings out there. I'm no authority on Alcoholics Anonymous, but I do love it for the life that is given to me, and I hope that you guys stay. Thank you so much.